Well, welcome into the show now, Brian Dayton with the West Virginia Chamber of Commerce. How you doing, man? Welcome to the new digs.
This is awesome. I'm just sitting in here. I'm loving this.
You are a local on my normal show. No, I don't do anything normal. You're a normal on the local show here in Charleston, and I know you've been on with the Talk Line guys from time to time. But it's great to have you in the new studios here at 1111 Virginia Street East in Charleston.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the invitation to be here today. And this is fantastic in here.
And because you were here during the old studio.
I was, several times.
Yeah, and so we've upped the game. That's genuine simulated brick on those walls there.
It looks very real.
It does look very real. All right, so let's get right to it. One of the hottest bills, Brian, that has been debated so far has been the vaccine bill. It failed to defeat yesterday the West Virginia Chamber of Commerce. Your group, one of the groups, was definitely happy with the decision by the legislature. Explain why.
Sure. So this was a bill, Dave, that, this bill's been up a number of years from now, not this particular one, but what was introduced was changed drastically by the West Virginia Senate. And we saw a bill come out in February from the West Virginia Senate to the House of Delegates that really just blew the doors off our school immunization laws. And West Virginia has some of the best school immunization laws in the country. And why is that important? If you look at our vaccination rates for our two-year-olds, we're among the bottom in the country, about the bottom five, bottom six states as far as the percentage of our two-year-olds that are vaccinated. By the time they get to the age of five, six, when they're heading into school, we have the best rate in the country. That's important because right now we see a measles outbreak going on in the United States. It has unfortunately already claimed the life of a little girl in Texas, an adult male in New Mexico, and we pray no more. But this is a very preventable but deadly disease. Right now there are cases of measles that have been found in Pennsylvania, Maryland, Virginia, Kentucky, and Ohio. I just named our five border states. Mm-hmm. You know where they have not been found yet?
West Virginia.
Bingo, West Virginia. And we want to keep that from here. We want to prevent that from coming into West Virginia. So the bill that came from the state Senate, it was a very broad bill, had philosophical religious exemptions. It mandated that private and parochial schools would not be able to set their own policy. They would not be able to keep a more safe policy in place. But in addition to that, which really shocked us, was that there was language in that bill that made it extremely easy to sue schools, churches, and child care centers if they did not adhere to that bill. I mean, it was just one of the most broad causes of action we've ever seen. And that was some of the things that came out of the Senate. So the bill stayed in the House Health Committee for a long time. We were engaged with it. What the House Health Committee did last week was they passed a bill that updated the medical exemption. Did not touch religious, did not touch philosophical, but it updated the medical exemption. And there seemed to be pretty broad consensus. Okay, this is a good compromise. Everybody's comfortable with it. That bill was then moved on to second reading Friday, which is amendment stage. When it hit amendment stage, an amendment made it onto the bill, which just brought so much of that back, a very broad, it was a religious exemption is what it was titled, but in practicality, it was a philosophical exemption masquerading as a religious exemption. And so we engaged very heavily. There were not just the West Virginia Chamber. There were many doctors, pediatricians, parents, nor average citizens from across West Virginia engaging this bill over this weekend. And I think that delegates really took time to read that amendment in conjunction with the bill, how it was going to work. And that's why we saw the result we saw yesterday.
And, you know, make no mistake about it. Again, we're talking to Brian Dayton of the West Virginia Chamber of Commerce. Brian, make no mistake about it. This thing doesn't get done based on the sheer numbers if it weren't for a lot of Republicans changing their minds from where they were.
There were more Republicans that voted no yesterday than there were Republicans who voted yes. Now, all nine Democrats voted no on this bill, but still more Republicans voted no in the House than voted yes. And there were several people who changed their minds. And it was an interesting, I think, some of the people, look, amendment stage, I'll be honest, can be very fast, can be very confusing. There were about seven secondary
amendments. And you're somebody that does this for a living.
Yes.
You watch these things. So.
And I'll be honest, Dave, it wasn't until probably Friday night after I had a chance to get the kids down and sit down and actually read that until I realized, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is more broad than even I realized it was. But you had seven secondary amendments and you had two primary amendments to be considered. It got confusing. I think some people just didn't appreciate how broad it was and learned and figured that out, read it over the weekend. Mm-hmm. And then I think some people, they were listening to their constituents, which when we've talked to delegates, it was about 80-20 against, you know, when they were talking about the emails and calls they were getting.
Had a text to the show. Who was the original sponsor of the bill, or was there an original sponsor?
So
I mean, I know the governor. This was part of what he wanted to do, but who was the original sponsor?
So this was the governor's bill, and so the way any governor's bill works is the speaker and the minority leader on the House side, the president and the minority leader on the Senate side, typically put their names on a governor's bill, and that's just by default. It's by request of the executive, and so but this bill was moved into the Senate Health Committee, and that's where it was first altered drastically, and that's where we saw that cause of action added onto it. The bill was really broadened, and so it was a very different bill than what we saw even introduced that made it its way from the Senate to the House.
All right. I know that you're always good for taking text and things like that. So I do have a text here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read you just to get your response on it. By the way, I want to make sure that people realize that neither Brian Date nor myself are physicians. Okay? So keep that in mind. This text says, by some of the best vaccine laws, does your guess mean some of the most extreme vaccine laws? It's true that West Virginia has some of the most extremely enforced vaccine laws mandates in the nation. COVID barely affected West Virginia in the beginning. It seems disease tends to come to West Virginia later than our neighboring states. Correlation does not mean causation. I bet it's the same in the Midwest as well as places like Montana and North Dakota. It's like 1984 with guest doublespeak, half the information.
Well, let me go ahead and first of all hit the first part. This bill has nothing to do with the COVID vaccine. The COVID vaccine is not required for school in West Virginia. I can't see a scenario where it ends up being added into that. So let's just go ahead and put that right out there. This bill had zero to do with the COVID vaccine. The vaccines that are required for school immunization in West Virginia have been in place for decades. We're talking about the MMR, which is measles, mumps, rubella, DTaP, which deals with whooping cough, polio, and chickenpox, hepatitis B are also on there. So we're talking about vaccines that have been in place for a very long time. When we look at are they working or are they not working, what we're seeing is when we've seen outbreaks that have occurred in the past in New York, in Texas right now, in California in the past, some of these didn't have laws that were as maybe strident as ours in West Virginia. We've been thankfully not having those outbreaks in this state. That's good because these are some deadly diseases that can transmit around.
What would you say, Brian, to those who say, and this is one of the arguments we heard on the floor, vaccines should be left up to the discretion of the parents. It's my kid. I can do what I want.
Well, and so West Virginia, so you do not require vaccines to be here in West Virginia. So homeschool parents do not have to go ahead and adhere to those vaccine laws. But what our law says is if you are going to enroll your child in the public school, these are the vaccines they must take unless there is a medical exemption. And there is a lot of discussion on that medical exemption. Is it working? Is it not working? And that's what the House Health Committee first addressed in the bill they sent out last week. But when you look at it this way, if it was as simple as you take a vaccine and you cannot get that disease, we might be having a different discussion. But vaccines, unfortunately, are not 100% effective. You may get a vaccine, and unfortunately, your body doesn't develop the immune response that it should create. And unless you get a titer test, you're not going to necessarily know that you lack those antibodies. So there can be situations where a person is vaccinated, but they come into contact with somebody, and especially if there's community spread, it will break through, and they can get the disease themselves. That's what we're ultimately trying to prevent.
Talking again to Brian Dayton from the West Virginia Chamber of Commerce. My social media, Brian, was flooded with people, as you may guess, yesterday that were saying that they were happy about the decision or that they were unhappy about that. But I'm going to say it looked like to me, and maybe it's just the people I follow or am friends with on social media, that the majority of people thought this was the right thing, many of them being even conservative Republicans. That's a little bit of a different take.
So there is polling that has been done on this issue. We shared that polling this past weekend. In depth in West Virginia, when you ask the questions about should – for example, one question is, are vaccines like measles and mumps generally a good idea or a bad idea? It's about 86% in the general population, but even among conservative voters, Dave, people who self-identify as conservative, it was 81% to about 7% good idea versus bad idea. When you ask, should students be required to get vaccines to prevent them from unknowingly transmitting diseases to their classmates, their siblings, their relatives, even if those students are healthy, again, among conservative voters, conservative, self-described conservative voters, it was a 70-20 issue. So it doesn't surprise me that what you're seeing in your social media feed is purporting to be that. That's what I saw. That's what I saw when I was on social media last night. It was an overwhelming majority were happy that the bill was rejected.
Talking with Brian Dayton from the West Virginia Chamber of Commerce. Can you hang out with me here just one
Absolutely.
Second? All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back with more right after this. You're listening to Metro News Midday on Metro News, the voice of West Virginia. Welcome back to the show. It's Metro News Midday across the state of West Virginia. Dave Allen with you. It is 2:22. We're talking with Brian Dayton from the West Virginia Chamber of Commerce. And I did want to get into some other things, but you know, we may have to have you back because the vaccine thing is really, really big. And again, it's done. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen next. I mean, is it done? D-U-N done?
As far as I know, especially that bill, they would have had to take some procedural motions today in order to revive it, which was not done. So it's done for the session.
One of the questions I thought that was interesting is I had some people on the show locally and statewide who pointed to the fact that a lot of the opposition to vaccines were coming from out of state, and that there were robocalls and robotext coming that were an actual snail mail going in the mailbox that actually it was traced back to, I think, Michigan or someplace like that. Your comment on that, it didn't seem to come from West Virginia, Brian. It seemed to come from out of state.
Though that's absolutely correct. There was a lot of out of state activity trying to push this bill across the finish line. That was one of the things we consistently kept hearing from delegates, is that they were getting these texts and the emails, and it was really, really bothersome to them because they'd trace it back and they were having area codes that were not 304, and they were coming outside of West Virginia. And I think that was one of the things that had a factor in what happened yesterday. But one of the things you need to probably understand about the West Virginia legislature is going up and trying intimidation tactics and threatening them, that doesn't work. And especially the tactics they were using on a lot of these people, they will dig in. I mean, you know, that's kind of a West Virginia nature sometimes.
We don't take kindly to being threatened.
We do not. And so it's, you know, the people sometimes forget the 100 members of the House of Delegates, they're citizens just like you and me. They put their name on a ballot. They were elected in there. But they do not like the threats that were coming at them. And it was especially, we saw a lot of these out-of-state entities, one in particular, the American Action Fund, that was hitting them. And that really had an impact on how this all played out.
Couple texts here for you. One says, has the guest ever heard of reports of doctors threatening homeschool parents in West Virginia with CPS reports of neglect for not wanting to vaccinate their kids? And thanks for taking questions, says the texter.
Yeah, that is not something, I'll be honest right up front, that is not something I've heard about.
Text says, nice to hear Chamber of Commerce believes in science and facts. Kudos for supporting keeping children safe from horrendous diseases. Wish the Republican MAGAs had as much sense. Now, I know you're a nonpartisan organization. I won't ask you to address the last part of that.
Well, certainly, you know, so let me just tell you a little bit about our membership, Dave, just to remind your listeners. I know we've talked about it on your morning show, but our members cover every industrial sector in West Virginia and are located throughout the entire state and collectively employ over half of the state's workforce. A lot of those members are in the healthcare field. We have doctors within our membership. We have nurses. We have a number of higher education entities. But we didn't hear from anybody within our membership saying, this is a good bill, we want it to pass. We heard from a bunch that said, this is not a good bill, please stop it.
Talking again with Brian Dayton from the West Virginia State Chamber of Commerce. Let's move away from the vaccines for a moment. What else have you been noticing in the legislature?
Well, it's been an interesting legislature. As you know, we saw a lot of change just following this election. So we have a new Senate president, a new governor, all but one new members of our Board of Public Works. So there's been some growing pains that we've seen from that. But there has been some frustration, you know, just some of the legislation coming out. We've spent a lot of time, as an example, Dave, really trying to make sure that we're not making it easier to sue businesses, churches, schools, child care centers, as an example. We've seen some provisions in bills coming from, example, the state Senate, and that we've been having to work to clean those out in the House of Delegates. We really worked for a number of years to bring West Virginia's legal climate more in line with other states. And unfortunately, we're spending a lot of time right now trying to defend that and make sure that we don't start to expand it back open.
When you say try to defend it, what's going on out there?
Well, you know, as I mentioned on the vaccine bill, you saw that right there, it would have made it easier to sue those entities. We've just seen some other bills that are passing through the Senate, and it's like, oh, and by the way, here's the cause of action where you can recover punitive damages and compensatory damages if it's not complied with. That's called a cause of action. And so just been sprinkled throughout on random bills, and that can create real problems. That one paragraph that's in any type of bill can automatically go ahead and open the floodgate. So you have to pay very close attention to what is passing. So that is taking a lot of our time, very closely reading what is passing, following along, following the amendment process, and safeguarding against that.
I know that you probably came from the Capitol, but when we had Jeff Jenkins on earlier, he was telling us, and I've been locked away in here for the last couple of hours, but he was telling me that some of the bills, or at least one of the bills, was being read with AI.
So I heard that. And so, I actually tweeted out, I'm a member of the state's AI task force, so I was like, I love it. Earlier today, a delegate who was upset, I think, about yesterday's outcome, had requested that bills be read in their entirety. And it only takes one because you have to read a bill on 3 days. So what typically happens is, can we have it explained in lieu of having it been read? Well, someone objects. All it takes is one. You have to read that bill. Well, you can imagine the poor clerk who has to set up there and actually read that bill. You could have a 50, 60-page bill, and they've got to read every single line. So they decided to use AI today, and it was kind of neat. Sounded like, I think Stephen Allen Adams called it, sounded like C-3PO. Mm-hmm. I don't want to misattribute that, but that was what we heard, and I listened in. I was like, yeah, that's pretty accurate. Just kind of cool.
I'll save my opinions on AI after you leave. All right, what's for the rest of the session, what are you looking at? Close it out here for us.
So, you know, we're still trying to get some things going that would be positive for jobs and economic development in West Virginia. It's been a little bit slow on that front this year, but we are still continuing to push. There are some bills that are moving. Yesterday we saw movement on a child care bill out of the House Health Committee heading to the House Finance Committee right now. There has been a bill that would modernize our statute of limitations on written contracts. That is another good example. So we've seen some positive movement, but we're just continuing to try to go ahead and get some more of those things moving.
And I always like to have you on after the session to kind of give a little bit of a report card or something like that, as you frequently do.
Looking forward to it.
As frequently do. Well, so how much time we have left in the legislature?
So today is day 42, I believe. So just about 2.5, not quite 3 weeks.
You're in the home stretch now.
Yes, we are.
Were you supposed to quickly mention something about a women's conference going on?
Yes, so tomorrow and Thursday, the West Virginia Chamber's Women's Leadership Summit is kicking off at the Greenbrier. So it's going to be another record crowd down there. We're just so happy for the success of this event. And so I am unfortunately staying back here at the Chamber office with the Capitol.
Ryan Dayton from the West Virginia Chamber, Congressman. It's always a pleasure to have you. And thanks for being on the news show. I appreciate you being here, man.
Appreciate you having me.